Welcome home. We are WNST AM 1570 Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are into spring. It is March. I want to remind everybody we're going to take the Maryland Crab Cake Tour presented by the Maryland Lottery in conjunction with Window Nation, our friends at Jiffy Lube and Liberty Pure Solutions. We're going to get that back out on the road in early April. Got a bunch of dates in April. Did a lot in February. Luke and I are going to be heading down to spring training. I have released two books this month, The Peter Principles, The History of the Angelo's family ownership of the team. That's coming to an end. And then beginning March 5th, and we are recording on March 5th, my father's birthday, releasing a 19-chapter book that was written in 2006 as a prelude to Free the Birds on my love of baseball, my family name, my father's love of baseball, and my childhood, and how this place has been here for 25 years and loving baseball in an environment where it's been kind of tough to love baseball. But all that apparently is about to change. This guy has been a friend and a foil for at least a decade coming on. I think I met him personally the day that Rob Manfred took over for Bud Selig a number of years ago down at the Hyatt in Baltimore. He is now with Front Office Sports. He is a longtime local journalist in the Washington area, an attorney as well, and covering the business of sports and law, amongst other things. Eric Fisher is our defending champion. He has sat in courtrooms dissecting massing money and hundreds of millions, really billions of dollars is what it's been billions, like since 2005, that has interacted and changed hands. But Eric Fisher, I'll say this to you. I said this to my wife in the aftermath. It took about 2-3 days for this to settle in. The Ravens had just lost the championship game. It was a little wacky time a couple weeks ago.
Yep.
I said to her, I've never thought or even spoken to you or anyone I know like you, my wife, my family, about what happens the day after Peter dies or the day after the Angelos family does it, or who the next person's going to be or how they're going to act. It felt like Cuba to me. It felt like Russia to me. It felt like it's never going to end. It's always going to be this way. But I'm sure you're here to tell me that things are going to change, right? Please tell me that, Eric.
Yeah, the Rubenstein purchase of the Orioles remains on track for approval. It's going through its normal cadences at the league level, and it could be somewhere right around opening day. That's not a locked in stone kind of date, but we're not looking at the summertime either. This is a matter of weeks and not months in terms of this getting across the finish line. But your point is well taken. You know, Angelo's era of 30 years, a long time. And, you don't know what it feels like to be outside of it until you're outside of it.
Yeah. And we're not there yet. Right. But we
not
have
not quite, but soon.
We have smoke signals. How does this come to you? I mean, you're a guy that I don't want to say you're an Oriole fan, but you certainly wrote lots of stories back, you know, with the Washington Times when all of this was being birthed with Angelos and Masson and the fight with Selig and, you know, all that went on 20 years ago to make the Nationals the Nationals. And then you've sort of moved on in your next job to covering all of sports and money and RSNs and where all this money was going. And certainly the Masson story was primarily yours for a number of years, where two or three times a year we get together and say, are they going to solve this? Are we going to get an all-star game? I mean, in the end, you and I blustered a lot over years and nothing ever really changed, and still nothing still has changed, really. Corbin Burns, a little bit of a change. But what do you expect to happen when this happens, and what's your sort of inside play on this? Because this isn't your first rodeo for an ownership change in Major League Baseball. You've seen this.
No. No, right now we're in the honeymoon phase or the pre-honeymoon phase. The early signs have been pretty good in the sense that Rubenstein's been out a lot. He's been to Camden Yards. He's been to Sarasota. He's tweeting a lot. And that was one of my big complaints with John Angelos, even in the recent years after he got the day-to-day control position, that you're in a rebuilding mode. And this is before, obviously, the great on-field success last year, that he needed to play a lot more, my feeling, and I said this on your show, that he needed to play a lot more retail politics and wasn't doing any of it. And already I'm seeing, just in a handful of days, way more in that sort of retail politics and sort of getting the name and visibility out there from Rubenstein in a way that I just never did from John Angelos. So that's a good early sign.
Retail now, politics, define that. That's a beautiful
retail politics in terms of just getting out and shaking hands and kissing babies, so to speak, in terms of going, meeting with politicians, going to meetings, going to Chamber of Commerce lunches, just getting out there and building relationships with people who matter in your town. And there just wasn't a lot of that, at least in any sort of public-facing sense, again, that I saw from John Angelos. I'm seeing some good early signs of that from David Rubenstein, that obviously he's a little limited in what he can fully say and do until he gets the full approval to get the keys to the kingdom here. But the early signs have been positive. But once that deal does get done, that's where the rubber meets the road, and we'll see what happens. But again, I think there's a honeymoon period that is emerging, and he seems to want to do the right thing. And the subtext that I'm getting is that he seems to recognize that there is a sort of unrealized jewel here, that yes, Baltimore is a smaller market. Yes, there are challenges that we've talked about, but there are great assets. There's a great lineage. There's a great history, and there are some real things to build from here.
Does it almost feel like an expansion team to some degree with a loaded roster? You know, it just feels like there's so many things they've done wrong or ignored or just really done poorly, like pettiness, enemies, people like me that have wanted nothing more than to love them. You know, if you learn nothing from a 19-chapter book I wrote in 2006, is like, all I've ever done is love the team, love the city, love baseball, my last name, the whole deal. And they've never, I said to my wife, I don't know what it's like to go down there and be treated well. I've never, ever, ever been down there since last century and had anybody be nice to me, ever. So I, as a journalist, as a citizen, as a fan, as a person who had some maybe uncomfortable questions for them sometimes that they never wanted answered, that's sort of my job. It's sort of holding them accountable. I don't think Rubenstein's going to have any problem with that sort of part of it, but there is a beginning of it where it feels like they have a first hand out to even the people that are already bought in, and to make it feel different. And what I've asked everybody is, what makes it feel different? And you could speak to this from the DC side of things with the creep that own the football team down there. I'm not one of them. I didn't go to the games this year. It's still in a crappy stadium. They're still called the Commanders. I don't know what that vibe would be, because they're going to win a lot of games this year. I mean, they're going to be a really good baseball team. That much is guaranteed. You're going to get that.
Yep.
But what else do you get with it that doesn't intimidate your lead broadcaster in the middle of baseball season, right? And throw him off. Just crazy stuff that's gone on recently that will stop. But where do you start to say, fresh page, open canvas? How does a billionaire come in and do that other than hiring really good people who aren't currently the people that are there? It needs to have new oxygen.
Yeah, and a lot of what we're seeing so far are the good early steps where he's just walking the facilities, asking a lot of questions, getting a lot of information, because that's really the big thing that needs to happen right now. But if you sort of just start with just, I want to learn as much as I can and I want to win ball games, if those are the two primary motivations, and those appear to be the two primary motivations, a lot of the stuff you're talking about just sort of falls by the wayside and things get a lot simpler to understand.
I think the bigger motivation is fixing the city here, bro. I don't think these are wealthy dudes. They're not getting into this for money. I don't know that they're, I mean, maybe he's got some ego about him with his television show or whatever.
Well, this is his hometown, but I don't want to put too much on him because he's still just a, you know, he's a businessman and a baseball team owner, but he doesn't have the responsibilities of the mayor, the governor, the city council president or whatever. So I don't want to be a little unfair here to him, but and yes, there are much bigger civic challenges that you're all wrestling with. And I get all of that. He can be a part of that, but that's not all on him. And I want to be fair about that.
Yeah, and I agree with that. But I've listen, I live downtown and I bought my place and sold it for less than I bought it for 20 years later after putting $250,000 into it. This was my view. So I watched it all, front row, paid the taxes, lost the money, watched the deterioration, watched the tumbleweed blowing down Conway Street on April nights when they got 4,000 people down there. Like, I saw it all, and I've always seen this potential, but I also think, like, the bigger – bring a Bloomberg in on this. Like, this isn't a play to be Mr. Big and own a baseball team, which was Peter's play, was to be a hero, right? This is a play to say, I can be a part of helping turn around a city in the way Detroit 20 years ago, like, right, that sports can be a part of that for downtown. This isn't a, well, we're going to come in and downtown's not going to work and we're going to build the stadium in the suburbs. These guys aren't thinking that way at all.
And I am getting a vibe to want to help, but help being the operative word.
Well, okay. And I'll hear Eric Fisher's here, front office sports. What's front office sports? Run me through that and your daily work, because it does encompass covering the media and the business media. And look, the RSNs and the media model for baseball, you and I could do a half an hour on where that's going, right?
Yeah. So, you know, this is a media outlet that covers the intersection of business and culture with sports. You know, it's been in existence for about 8-9 years now. I joined on last year, and what I'm doing is helping to put together a twice daily newsletter product that goes out to a very large audience around the country and getting them all plugged in on everything in and around the business of sports.
What is the business of sports around? What is David Rubenstein inheriting here in regard to Masson, the broken RSN system, apps not working, just the whole industry is looking at itself, much like our industry did in journalism and media. It's the reason you're not at the Washington Times anymore, and I didn't get a gold watch in the Baltimore Sun, right? Like, they need to figure this out, and I don't know that that even smart people like you have sniffed what the real answer is. I've often thought, like, all right, I'm a fan. You got me in the club, you know. Charge me $1,000 at the beginning of the year. Send me a 13-game plan. Send me all the games on TV. Send me a jersey of right. You know, that there's going to be a bundle package for fans that's going to sort of put you all in that the team's going to own. I guess in the end, that's what it's going to be, right?
Potentially. It's going down towards some kind of subscription type model like that. And there are different flavors of that. With regard to Masson specifically, there are specific issues to them, and then there are the macro issues. The macro issues, obviously, as you allude to, is we've got cord cutting going on all across the country in all stripes, way beyond sports, where a lot of people younger than us, as they're coming into adulthood, have no interest in a traditional cable or satellite package. That's the existential issue. With regard to Masson specifically, this is an RSN that's got a history, as you allude, is sort of cheaping out on some things. They don't have a DTC direct-to-consumer option as it currently exists. And you've got the complicated shared situation with the Nationals, which obviously we've spent many hours discussing as well.
Well, that's going to end, right? Now that they have sane people in that, they're going to find a financial ending to that, right? And separate.
Potentially. Right? I think there are discussions along that, and Rob Manfred's even spoken to that, that change, literally the quote was, change brings opportunity. And there potentially could have been new people on both sides of the table, because the learners were thinking about selling the Nationals. That's no longer happening. They've pulled the team off of the market. So Rubenstein will have to deal with the Nationals in that regard. But maybe they already came to a resolution on the second rights term in a matter of weeks, whereas the first one took like 12 years of court hearings to settle out. And then they did the second one now that the die was cast and we know what essentially the end result of all that legal back and forth was. The second one literally got done in a matter of weeks.
The gray in your beard came from those dozen years.
Oh, 100%. 100%. Yeah, my family was sick of hearing about that too. So I get it. So maybe that comes together. But yes, there are challenges big and small around Masson. And now we've got a potential distribution issue as well, that Comcast, obviously the number one carrier in your neck of the woods, as is mine. You know, they're in sort of a contractual standoff right now, and you could have a situation, if this doesn't get resolved, where this network is not going to be on the number one cable carrier in the market.
All the things you were writing about in LA and New York 15 years ago, right? With the Dodgers and the Yankees being, they haven't figured it out all these years. Now it's just become our problem. Baseball's problem has moved. San Diego got thrown off of television in the middle of the season last year.
Yeah, that was a little bit different because Diamond Sports literally went bankrupt. Comcast is certainly not bankrupt. The issue there is a little bit more nuanced in the sense we've seen this play out. Closest corollary to what's happening here in neck of the woods is Pittsburgh and Seattle, where Comcast put those RSNs on higher, more expensive tiers. They would like to do the same with Masson. And like everything else, it's a negotiation and a dance, and we're trying to see where that's going to net out.
Eric Fisher has been my friend a long time. He covers media, sports, money, business, billionaires, and how it all ties together along all sports, not just in baseball, but he is a little bit of a seam head. I've seen him around the ballpark, and I hope to bump into you in a press box sometime with Rubenstein. For the rest of it, and I guess the bigger picture of me, being so pissed off at the NFL and Peacock that I went up to Hollywood Casino to watch that lousy, cold, terrible Dolphins-Chiefs game. We now, the Amazon Prime's on Thursday night. I'm not an old get off my lawn guy, dude. I'm just a sort of like, I'm not paying you and giving you my credit card to watch a Thursday night football game between the Commanders and the Bears. You know, I'm just not doing it. And I feel that way about it, but this is all about the change, right? Like the fact that the digital has gotten into this, the only way it matters for them is to get it off of your television, and you have to go to your computer and you have to find it. And that's going to be the new model, right? I mean, they're going to do that with playoff games. We're going to be coming. A pay-per-view world soon, right?
It's sort of moving in that direction, but it's important to note that the applications as they currently exist, you're talking about what's gone to streaming is the least popular of the regular season packages. And what has gone to streaming in the playoffs bit is the one of the worst time slots of the wild card weekend. They're sort of still dealing at the margins on this as it relates to your biggest games and your biggest moments. Those are still on over-the-air TV. And I think it's a matter, and I think we're going to be in this realm for a number of years yet in terms of kind of seeing where this all nets out, because we're still in the middle of this cyclone of change. And nobody, and anybody claims they know exactly how it's going to play out, they're lying to you, because nobody knows for sure. And there's still going to be some left turns on this that we don't know about yet. And so I think the NFL is just placing some smaller bets, and again, putting some of their lesser inventory on these platforms and seeing what shakes out.
Well, what they can get away with, right? Like literally, and I don't know what they got away with, and I don't trust, they all lie, especially to people like you, that the day after Peacock says we got a billion subscribers, you know, whatever. What was their shakeout? And I'm sure they had a PR guy to like Chad Steele to buff it all up and tell you it was a beautiful thing. It was a big success. But I don't know.
A 23 million for that Chiefs Dolphins game. And that's a third party audited number. I mean, I get what you're talking about with PR guys, but the third party Nielsen stuff, and we can have a whole separate conversation about Nielsen's modeling and everything, but that is a third party audited system.
But 23 million people watch the game?
On average, yes.
I watched the game, but I watched it in a casino. I didn't watch it on, and I didn't give them. I wonder how many subscriptions they got. You know, how many people signed up in the 5 days before solely so they could watch the football game on the trial basis of you're going to screw me and keep my credit card 30 days from now, and I'm going to find it in May, and I'm going to say, oh, I thought I paid $5 for that game, and I paid 40 so far.
Come back to me in a little over a month, because that churn period that you described, that's a fair point, but Comcast will report their earnings early to mid-April, and we'll have a better sense of that then.
If it worked then, literally from a business.
We'll have some sense, yes, because Comcast every quarter says how many subscribers they have. As of the last quarter before the game, they had 31 million. And if they come back with some dramatically different number, we will know that the NFL game had a material impact.
Well, it's like charging $8 for a beer, $12 for a beer, or $17 for a beer at a concert. Eight, I buy it. 12, probably not. 17, no way. And I think the same thing for a Chiefs Dolphins game. It's like, all right, you know, if my team were in it, I guess I'd have to fork over the money and do it. Like, but I don't know that I abstained as a signal to them and saying, nah, you're not getting away with this. And I think some people
did. But you got
did.
Counted essentially in the modeling, because there's an out-of-home component that for the last 2-3 years now, all the Nielsen numbers, linear and streaming, have an out-of-home component, and you were modeled into that number because they do a sampling of out-of-home and then they extrapolate the sampling. So you essentially were counted in that number.
Fair enough, because I did watch the game, but from Peacock's perspective, the only reason they got in was to get subscriptions, right? They didn't get mine. So I'm wondering how many people they really shake out.
But they got Hollywood casinos.
Well, they had that before because they had EPL. So, you know, I've learned this. I don't watch soccer on Saturday mornings, but if you need to have Peacock if you do. So when I bitched about it, everybody yelled like, but I have it already for this or that, or but I don't have it and I ain't getting it for the Chiefs and the Dolphins. And I do know, I don't want to belabor the point for our audience, but this is where it's going for all of this in some way. And I think the Orioles thing, we should get ready for. It's not Super TV anymore back in the 70s or home team sports. Whatever the new thing is, they're going to have to be creative and make me want to buy the $8 beer and not eschew the $17 beer. Make me buy in and make me feel good about it. And I think that's really the charge for Rubenstein, is because Angelo's hasn't done anything to make anybody feel good about anything in a long, long time. I wonder when new management's going to hang a sign and it's going to start to feel different. That's all. Other than the team on the field feels great, but the rest of it, all the wrapper around it.
Well, and again, this is where it's going to be very interesting to see how Rubenstein also approaches the on-field. And we can drill into that a little bit more, because there's an interesting kind of Atlanta Braves model where Atlanta Braves have gone to a lot of that young talent, gone to them pre-arbitration, pre-free agency, lock them up. And if Rubenstein does that and goes to your Adley Rutschmans of the world and, like, you're going to be an Oriole for the next 10 years, that is a massive signal to your town that I want to win and continue to win.
And they have the money to do it and the wherewithal to do it.
Oh, you know? Sure. It's all about priorities and action, no doubt.
Well, and they can borrow for tomorrow because they have the money to do that, and thinking, like, we're not going to have 28,000 people at the ballpark the next time we clinch a pennant. Next time we clinch a division. And I hope that there is a new day here. It's so exciting to have you on under these circumstances. I try not to be too negative. I really am trying to be like, what are they doing? That really is the question, because it needs to be dramatically different. And I think both of our eyes are going to be open. And this is for the sport to take over a crown jewel franchise that has been just driven through the mud for 30 years and maybe resurrected to that level of the way the Red Sox were, the way the Cardinals were, the way the Astros have become this thing in recent times. Yep. And the Braves, to you, the amount of money it throws off, this team should be that forever. For the next 20 years, it can be as good as it ever was. And we haven't talked about it in that way in our friendship. And I don't think anybody, I haven't talked about that in 25 years of having the radio station, because I never thought it could ever be maximized with this guy running it. And I was right.
Also, keep in mind, as we talk through the whole time, that the latter really two thirds of the Angelo's era was all wrapped around conflict, because obviously he never wanted the team in Washington. And because once that became a thing, it was always some element of conflict, whether it be with Washington, with the league office, in courtrooms, with fans, whoever. It's just that whole, the Angelo's era, if you sort of boil it down almost to one word, it's conflict, because the latter two thirds, those 20 years of essentially nothing but conflict, and Rubenstein has essentially an opportunity to come in with a clean slate without that conflict. And like I said, the very, very early signs are encouraging, but he doesn't carry that baggage of conflict that Angelo's obviously has.
Well, if you look to your left after game six, when the fireworks are going off at Camden Yards, and as Buck once said, they're pile diving, and the city's about to have a parade, and I'm in the left field press box with you, and you look down, you see me sobbing openly, you'll know it's fixed. So, hey, I appreciate you, Eric, and you know yep. What I'm, I've waited a long, long time. Had a lot of people say to me, they feel best for me. And I'm like, don't feel good for me until I'm back in doing the job that I was doing for 22 years before it was interrupted 18 years ago. But I feel good for the possibilities for my city, because it does feel like, and I'll leave you with this. The day after all this happened, my wife and I were at Drug City, local sponsor of ours, a liquor store. And I don't drink champagne. And I was kidding my friends from Curio, Cannabis and Wellness, about, is there a cannabis strain for celebration? It's like a champagne. And I thought, you know what? I like red wine, and I'm not a guy that buys expensive red wines. I drink a $15 bottle, but I like really good red wine when somebody else buys it. And I thought, you know what? This is going to be the celebration. I spent $60 at Drug City on a bottle. It was appropriate. The Prisoner. Delicious wine. I've had it before. So the night it happens and I see you and Orand and all these guys reporting that it's done, and I see the press conference and I get the invite to the press conference to ask questions, I'm going to unleash the Prisoner, because I feel like I've been imprisoned here, Eric, for a long, long time.
Yeah, and like I said, the best thing that you can sort of hope for is that a whole city of fans waking up on any given day, hey, maybe we'll win today. And you've not had that feeling for a very long time. I know the team's better now, but how long did it go on that you were just assuming today was going to be a loss? And that's a hard thing to have to feel. And now you can potentially feel like, yeah, maybe we're going to win today.
Tried doing radio for 32 consecutive years in spring training, and on March 5th of every year, it's not. I mean,
you already
been
know.
5 years
you already
in 32
know what's
years.
There's yeah.
5 years in 32 years where you legitimately could stand here and say they have a chance to make the playoffs and be good this year. The other 27 years, it's been how awful the ownership has been, and there has been no other story. So I'm really looking forward to having people think of me as the guy that loves baseball, not the guy that hates it.
Yeah, and again, it goes back to what the league has said, and this is one of their talking points that I'll actually agree with. To the extent that you are talking about wins and losses and not the kind of stuff that I make my living out of,
courtrooms.
That's when things are going better. And if you actually are legitimately talking about, are we going to win today, that means things are better.
Well, the day after he signs up, the next thing's Henderson, Rutschman, you know, like where's the real commitment to me getting a jersey and getting back in? And I can't wait for it. Now, fast track, last thing for you. What does fast track mean? You've seen these things. Well, there's no reason for them to slow play. I heard that from the minute it happened. I know how at odds Angelos is with Manfred and the whole thing. And obviously what happened with Wes Moore here and the $600 million the team's getting.
Yeah.
This is fast track. What slows it down? What speeds it up? And what
usually
really
when there's
could
a
have
fast
it happen on
track,
opening day? You know?
Yeah, usually with these ownership transfers, when there is a problem, it means that there's some issue with actually the money and actually the deal itself, and there's some complicated financing. This guy's got lots of money. This deal, as I understand it, is structured much more cleanly than a lot of these. And so that's what helps it along, that like, if you got the money, you just move right along. And it's almost like a massive version of buying a car. If you're coming in buying a car with cash, you know, you're not spending 4 hours in the finance manager's office trying to work something out here, and you're driving away a lot quicker. And I'm being metaphorical here, but that's sort of what's going along here, that as I understand it, pretty clean deal, and away they go.
All right. So I hope to have you back on after the clean deal. I hope to see you at Oriole Park at Camden. I hope to get your crab cake somewhere along the line.
Yes.
You guys up in Jersey got to get down here, get something legitimate. I'll get you over Fadley's. We're going to be doing Fadley's live on Friday from 2 until 5 on Oriole Home Games. All are brought to you by the Maryland. You also get a 10 times the cash ticket here, even though you're not a state resident. You're still allowed to play. Our friends at Window Nation, 866-90-NATION. I'm getting some doors this year, so I'm looking forward to that. They do that as well. And our friends at Jiffy Lube, MultiCare, and Liberty Pure Solutions sponsoring the Maryland Crab Cake Tour on a little bit of a hiatus this month. We're getting ready for new management around here, and we're really excited about that. Even though the Terps have got us disappointed and the Ravens aren't going to be doing much in free agency, we are still very, very much on our A game. Eric Fisher can be found out at Front Office Sports. He can also be found out on the social media avenues. And any other big news you're following, and like the next big thing that's on your radar? Other in Baltimore, it's all ownership, but there's a lot of other things happening in the sports world.
Yeah, getting back to the RSN issue, we've got Diamond Sports, which is the parent company of Bally Sports, not your RSN, but a lot of other RSNs around the country, trying to emerge from bankruptcy. There's a plan coming together where Amazon is actually going to be a part owner of this company. But the big question is, how do they survive, and with what rights do they survive with? Because there's actually negotiations going on with not only baseball, but hockey and basketball. And really fascinating story, lots of layers, gets into all the RSN and streaming stuff that we're talking about, but on a pretty macro scale.
Reminds me a lot of newspapers. There's no model yet. I mean, you know, there's no like, we figured it out, and for all the sports, right? We're going to do it the way F1 does it, or we're going to do it the way they do. Nobody, horse racing, these fringe sports, bowling, they never figured it out, right? So, like, I don't know where it is for them. Wrestling's figured it out, right? I mean, wrestling's the one place where they kind of figured it out, but they also have such rabidity in their fan base that you have to buy it in a way of being
and
a
no
Pearl
labor
Jam
union.
Fan or – you know, you have to buy it. I don't know that we're there yet with baseball here, for sure, in the numbers that they need to support $50 million a year for Adley Rutschman and $50 million a year for Gunnar Henderson in a local market. But it is a crown jewel, and we're going to breathe it back to life, Eric Fisher. We are.
A new day is emerging.
New crab cakes ready for you to eat. Eric Fisher, Front Office Sports. Go find him out there. You can find me anywhere. Good conversation and wise conversations are sold. Luke's covering the Orioles and the Ravens, and we are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. And we never stop talking Baltimore positive.